Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. You're invited to a special town hall meeting. Carolla Drinks presents the Reasonable Doubt Town Hall with Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla. Admission is $30 and includes two free drinks. Your ticket will also include a free download of Mistrial by Mark Garagus and Pat Harris and narrated by Mike Dawson. Don't wait, tickets are going fast. The Reasonable Doubt Town Hall, Thursday, July 20th. 20th, 7 p.m. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the author of The Gloves, Robert Anasi. With Gina Grad on news, Walt Bryan on sound effects, and a visit with David Wilde. And now, getting all of his F-bombs out now before he testifies before Congress next week, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a trip to get on, man, to get on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Now I got bad news for Bald Bryan. But first, good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Bryan.
The House of Adam.
Yes. And David Wilde, of course.
Hey, Adam.
The 90s is the name of the show. Sundays, 9 o'clock on CNN. I love those retrospective shows. So, stuff to share. First, Brian, yeah, the bad news
is... What's the bad news?
Somebody tweeted me a whole, basically, 11-minute dissertation, video dissertation on traffic, what causes traffic, what stops traffic, what helps traffic. Turns out, a lot of counterintuitive things, like adding lanes just adds more cars.
Okay.
Like, it never... You know, you have X amount of, you have four lanes and 4,000 cars. You make it eight lanes, you'll just get 8,000 cars. Like, it just, they just keep adding on. It doesn't really work. They talked about a whole bunch of stuff that works, a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't work. They said the one thing that works is stopping before you get onto
the
freeway.
The metering
the
lights?
The metering. It said that's the only effective thing out of this whole thing.
What if I was the cause of traffic in L.A.?
You could, well, certainly symbolically you need to be killed.
Wow.
As the face of traffic.
Yeah,
obviously, you can't cause all
sure,
this traffic.
Sure, I'm a symbolic head.
You're certainly part of the problem.
Wow. Right. That's what I'm saying.
You're welcome, everyone.
Are you going to change your ways?
It's funny. They were going through all the stuff, and I was like, yeah. And then it was like the one thing that you mentioned was the one thing that did work.
It also goes on to point out that the meters that we do have are the wrong kind of meters.
Of course they are.
Yeah, there's apparently two kinds.
Well, then Brian's right.
Well, hold on. Let's hear.
Well, there's...
Because I run them all.
There's system-controlled ones that are based on actual traffic that are presumably monitored by the traffic agency and adjusted. That's not what we have.
I'm glad Gary pointed it out. Because I'm tired of waiting to get on the freeway and watching the freeway traffic just speed at normal speed.
Adam's obviously,
like, why are we waiting?
Yeah, there's nothing around. But in traffic, meters do work with the traffic. But an interesting story. And the other thing that works that we have none of is roundabouts.
Yeah,
much safer,
not many of those.
And they work. So anyway, all
I have to say, I hit traffic today at 3:45 this morning in New Jersey. And I'm like, I cannot believe that there could be traffic at 3:45 in the morning.
Going into Manhattan?
I was going to the airport.
Catching a flight. JFK?
Yeah.
There used to be a time, Sundays, after certain hours, weekends, whatever. I was just thinking about whatever the record was for the Cannonball Run. That's an actual event. And it's, you know, it's, I don't know, wherever you leave Coney Island and you go to Venice Beach or something, or the Santa Monica Pier. And I don't know, it's like 24 hours. And they had a race. They would have a race every year. Cannonball Cars.
Not just the greatest movie of all time.
No. But I don't think that record could ever be broken now because of congestion. Yeah. You know, you can outrun the fuzz. You can get your fuzz buster and your tanks, your fuel tanks that hold 50 gallons and stuff like that. But if you're just going to hit pockets of traffic everywhere at 4 in the morning now.
Would Waze help? I don't know.
Disqualify if you use Waze.
That's right.
All right. So there's that. I was talking yesterday about Gerard Butler, and he came in and he monitored the radio show a million years ago for his movie that turned out to be a horrible movie. 13% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think.
Truth.
But he was actually doing research, and he was using me as research for a DJ. And when I asked him why, not on the air, but when I asked him why, he said, I heard this jag you did after going to Jimmy's Super Bowl party and getting drunk, and I thought it was so funny that you were the guy I wanted to watch. And I couldn't remember where that thing was or what exactly it was. It was with Teresa Strasser, I believe. Brian was probably there somewhere.
Brian is there and jumps in on this clip. It was you were right, by the way. It was the day after the first Giants Patriots Super Bowl, which I believe is February 4th, 2008.
So we'll play that for you, and then we'll hear a celebrity airplane story, David Wild.
Sure, that'd be a pleasure.
All right, let's listen to that.
Now let's talk about the Super Bowl ads. USA Today has printed the ad meter results.
Mm-hmm.
The most popular ad from the Super Bowl yesterday was the Budweiser ad featuring, I know you're probably half in the bag by this time, the Dalmatian who trains the Clydesdale to make the beer wagon team.
I was doing that thing because the room was spinning where I closed one eye, so the room would stop spinning. And I did see little bits and pieces of the Bud. Right? You know, too many animals in these commercials.
Nothing
too many
like dancing animals.
Animals and polar bears and stuff like that. I don't like it.
In fact, all of the top ones, the second is FedEx beats giant carrier pigeons.
That was great. They ripped off Adam's pterodactyl idea.
I didn't see that one at all.
Bridgestone. Critters scream with squirrels.
I was throwing up at that point, I think.
Giant rat goes for guy's bag of Doritos.
I was having a fist fight on the lawn with one of Jimmy's neighbors. Elderly man.
Men sneak woman. Beer into wine and cheese party.
I had gotten on the phone and ordered some whores to come over at that point. I was pretty loaded.
Do you remember the one where the scent of nuts makes the unattractive woman alluring for planters?
I called an ex-girlfriend. I was crying in the guest bedroom.
Now, what was happening by the time...
Calling her whore.
Uh-oh. When the guy's shirt stain was talking, he was at the job interview, but his stain was talking louder than he was, tied.
I was beating the crap out of my wife and attempting to feel up my daughter at that point.
And by the time the lizards...
I was pretty loaded.
By the time the lizards were dancing with Naomi Campbell for Sobe?
I was shouting racial epithets at that point at nobody.
Now, when the baby was using E-Trade savings to hire a clown, anything?
I'd gotten into a fight with Jimmy's mailbox at that point. It was, now to be fair, it wasn't just a regular mailbox. It was shaped like a giant frog. And it looked at me cross-eyed, and I threw down.
How about when Shaquille O'Neal tried being a jockey for vitamin water?
I was backing my car over Jimmy's assistant at that point when I was attempting to drive through his living room.
How about the big Pepsi commercial with Justin Timberlake when he sucked into a hazards by a woman sipping Pepsi?
I was calling a female officer sugar teats at that point and actually screaming about how the Jews control Hollywood.
Uh-oh. Do you remember by the time it was the Gatorade ad for Gatorade is a dog's best friend?
Mm-hmm.
Anything? Do you remember?
I called my dad up and started screaming, "Die, old man, I hate you." And then I broke down into a heap, and then I started hugging the phone.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How about Carlos Mencia when he was trying to teach guys how to pick up girls?
I was raping somebody who was at the party. It was unclear who it was. And, you know, if you're listening, my sincerest apologies.
Do you remember when Will Ferrell did a commercial for Bud Light?
Vomiting into a potted plant.
Okay. That was after the rape.
I was either before or after or during, and that much I know.
I heard both involved the potted plant.
That's right. Maybe I was raping a ficus plant in Jimmy's guest bedroom and then vomiting into it. That's what I was doing at that point.
A lot of talk about the Sun Silk commercial with icons Madonna, Shakira, and Marilyn Monroe.
Back to screaming about the Jews controlling Hollywood at that point.
I went back
to that. Yeah.
How about the remake of the horsehead scene from Godfather for Audi?
I had decided at that point to try to stow away in the boot of Jimmy's Range Rover and take over his life.
Okay, how about for the Gatorade G2 when Derek Jeter sees a ball field everywhere he goes?
I, at that point, was making fun of Jimmy's assistant who dropped some nachos by holding it up and yelling, "My name is Brad," and then I dropped the nachos and then I stomped on them and cried.
Okay. Incredibly lucid memory, by the way.
Yeah. I know. It's amazing.
I was really lit up, but I remember almost everything I did.
Do you remember the Career Builder ad when the woman pulls out her heart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. I caught a glimpse of that, but I had my back to the TV set, and I was yelling, drink from the horn. I'd found a powder horn that Jimmy had plugged up one side and filled it with Manischewitz.
Well, you know, one of the least popular ads during the whole Super Bowl was early on. It was during the first half, so maybe you remember it. It was a Doritos commercial featuring a music video for online song contest winner.
I was being tackled down and restrained by most of male guests at the party, and I was screaming, "Let me up, I'll kill you."
Okay, this was one of the least popular commercials, so I don't know if you tuned into it, but it was for GMC Yukon. It was touting their new fuel-efficient hybrid model.
Jeff Conaway and I were doing rails in the bathroom and talking about a sitcom idea that would be a good vehicle for both of us.
You might remember the Icebreakers ad because it featured Carmen Electra. She's pretty. She was wowed by a fan with Icebreakers ice cubes.
I was up on Jimmy's roof with my shirt off yelling, "I'm king of the world."
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was pretty drunk.
I'm almost scared to ask. Dell had a commercial for their red products that go towards AIDS charities.
I had gotten nude, greased myself up with Crisco, and was trying to get a running start and stuff myself into Jimmy's convection oven.
I don't. This might have stuck in your mind because Angelina Jolie was in it. It was a promo for a new movie from Universal. She looked incredible. It was the movie Wanted.
No, I at that point had slapped a pregnant woman's cell phone out of her hands and yelled, "There's no personal calls on Super Bowl Sunday."
So you didn't really see any.
I didn't see any of the commercials. No, I was drunk.
I don't know what prompted that. But
it
anyway.
Feels very Gerard Butler.
Yes. And for some reason, he needed to see that in person, but not for more than a day.
I did watch that movie on a plane as well. That's a bad movie.
Ugly Truth?
Oh, The Ugly
no.
Truth?
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. I was thinking of the one where he's taking Jennifer Aniston in because he's a bounty hunter, but that was another.
I missed that one.
He strung together a few dogs in a row.
Jennifer Aniston was like a fugitive.
Wasn't she in the trunk of his car or something?
Yeah, it's like his ex-wife and... sort of,
and he's
fugitive.
a bounty hunter.
Was it a zany romantic comedy?
I think it was an action. I think it was supposed to be in the vein of like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but didn't quite. Hit the mark.
It was really. It should just be called "How Much to Pay Really Good Looking People to Do Stuff They Don't Want to Do Creatively." Like that's what all that stuff.
Guys, we got
like,
a great project. The title needs work.
You see the commercial with like Jennifer Aniston jumps out of the trunk and is running, you know, with the taped hands behind her. It's like she doesn't want to do this. Right. You know, she just. Good payday.
Yep.
Light lifting.
Maybe
whatever.
She likes Gerard. Maybe they're friends. They met on the award circuit one year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What's lower, Bounty Hunter or The Ugly Truth?
Just knowing the score for The Ugly Truth, I'm going to say The Ugly Truth. 13's hard to beat, man.
All right.
I don't even know what the movie's called. Is it called Bounty Hunter?
I think
it's called The Bounty Hunter.
The Bounty Hunter.
And it is a tie.
Gary, nice. Don't. I was trying to sell it a little bit here. All right. Anyway, I'll let you know what the number is right after I tell you about Geico. Everybody's got the to-do list. Maybe it's crap on a Rotten Tomatoes score before I do a Geico spot, or maybe it's, picking up the dry cleaning. How about you go to geico.com? 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Put a little extra money in your pocket, a little wham, a little walking around money. So just go to geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Geico. Yeah, it's weird. I knew that Bounty Hunter's horrible movie, but you think, how could it be lower than 13? It's tied.
It can't.
Yeah, turns out it can't. Yeah.
It's tied. All right, David Wilde, you had an encounter on the flight from New York out to L.A.?
That makes it sound a little sexier than it was. I wish I had some encounters. No, yeah, what happened was I flew to New York 12 days ago thinking I was there just for 3 nights.
I was going to say, that's a long haul, 12 days.
Well, my mom got very ill while I was there, and I ended up spending the last 7 days in the hospital trying to help out, which I know you talked medical care, and whatever you said was wrong. So let's not get into that. But,
well, he also talked mothers, and you might not agree there.
Yeah, exactly. No, but what happened was on the way there, I remember I flew Virgin America.
How would I say was wrong?
I'm just going to assume.
No, I didn't say anything. I said I don't know anything about how any of this stuff works. I like people to have skin in the game. I like them to be responsible to some degree for their own stuff. That's what I'm saying.
Just based on spending 7 days at a hospital, like walking around all hours, there's no one there who needs less help. There's no one there who deserves less help. It's like, it's so horrible. It's like I haven't spent much time in hospitals in my life, thank God. And every time I do, it's like, oh boy. You know, there's nothing that needs less support or less care or less attention. It's like, but that's not my encounter. My encounter was on the way to New York. I thought, okay, I'm going to watch. There was a movie about a kid wanted to meet J.D. Salinger. I said, I'll watch that on the way there. And then I wanted to watch this movie, which I'd meant to see, called Miss Sloane with Jessica Chastain. But then I got caught up on it, had satellite TV, and I watched some MSNBC, some CNN, some Fox News, not really. And then at the end of the – so on the way back, I said, I'm going to watch this movie. And then I got on the flight this morning at 7 a.m., having left New Jersey, set my alarm for 3 a.m. to get – because I was way out of the middle of nowhere. And I sat on the plane, and then the last people on were – Jessica Chastain and her new husband. I guess she got married in the last few weeks. I don't know if she was coming back from her honeymoon, but they were in my row. And I will say, if you want
first class,
I hate to say, but yes, it was.
Why do you hate to say?
No, I'm proud to say. Damn it. No, in fact, I fought hard for first class. Like, what happened was when my mom got ill, I called the airline to say, I'm not going to make this flight back. I'm going to have to delay. And the travel people said, oh yeah, you can go coach anytime. And I'm like, well,
did you have a first class ticket at that point?
Yes, I did.
But if you can change it, you can go coach anytime.
Right, that's what they're telling me. But I actually managed to, my wife, knowing that, you know, I was exhausted, fought hard and got me, there was on a flight without paying extra, got me on the first class.
She finagled.
So I could be next to Jessica Chastain.
Did you make her do a director's cut commentary right next to her?
I did not. I had actually.
What's happening in this scene?
Were you thinking?
I'd met her at the Critics' Choice Awards, and she seemed like the nicest person on earth. But I didn't even want to say hello because you see what I look like. And her husband is a count from Italy who literally – I thought, okay, I'm not the same species. He was literally for a 7 a.m. flight coming from wherever they were coming from, was in some sort of dapper white suit buttoned didn't change. And I'm like, you know, I'm the guy who kicks off my sneakers and collapses drooling over the movie all over the screen. I was a mess, even more than usual. But I did not ask her for any commentary. I was sort of hid. You know how those personal screens, you can move it?
No, I don't. I've never flew in first class.
Well, I manipulated it so that no one could see what I was watching.
So she didn't know. And you had the earbuds in.
Yes.
She couldn't hear her.
She couldn't hear. But by the way.
I bet you she would have enjoyed it if you would have shared it with her.
Well, the funny thing is, I think I noticed the guy in front of me was watching it too. So I think maybe her being on the plane.
She's giving Tilda Swinton a run for her opaqueness.
She's almost blue.
Yes.
In that picture.
You should see her, the blood in her, under her skin.
She's a very light skinned person.
Do you happen to notice what she ate? Because she's a vegan, I believe. So I wonder if she had any steak or chicken.
I think they did not eat. Her husband was on a phone up the whole time. I was literally drooling, watching movies. I was emotionally upset because I skipped a meal. I passed, which has never happened on a flight, passing on whatever they were handing out at some point.
Oh, that's, you can't. I mean, on first class, I don't care how much your heart's broken.
Fill your pockets, you gotta eat.
Yeah, you gotta eat on those. One of the worst flights I ever had was a first class flight where the guy refused. It literally went through the, you know, glass of champagne before we pushed back. No, thank you. Orange juice. No, thank you. Hot nuts. No, thank you. Water. No, thank you. Meal. No, thank you. Ice cream cart at that point. Sunday cart. No, thank you. Oh. After dinner drink. No, thank
you.
Who is
this animal?
Hunger strike.
This guy all the way to New York, first class, passed on every single offering. I couldn't imagine. I was new to first class at that point in my career, and I just couldn't imagine a bowl of hot nuts. Like, no, what? No.
Well, was your mouth full? Can I have her?
He was not on a diet. I mean, he was just a sort of average built guy who was youngish. Nothing.
Wow.
See, like anything.
I think of myself as the worst person to fly next to. I'm like between the drooling and the knocking things over. I'm pretty much a mess. My wife is the best. She's like a machine. I never sleep on a plane, so that my wife like turns off like a computer. She's, you know, petite. She goes to sleep. She wakes up before it takes off. But today I sat next to a guy who was worse than me. He flew with his whole family. They were behind us in the first row of coach, and he flew alone. Wife was there, but he
Gordon
kept
Ramsay.
talking to them the whole time and
over
like knocking
back
on the screen. Yeah, there's like on Virgin America, there's like a clear
glass
sort of or plastic
Lucite
thing,
or Lucite. Plastic,
and he kept knocking and talking. It was like
he sat first class.
Yes,
and was his wife in first class?
No,
I like this guy.
Yes,
and the whole family's in coach, and he's talking. He's communicating
because they're technically only one row apart.
Right.
Oh, and bringing them up to use the first class bathroom, which is not allowed.
It's perfect. You spend X amount of more money, and that's part one of the things you get. It's just how life is supposed to work, and I got no problem with it. I don't know if people think it's like an elitist thing or something. It's like, look, I don't.
Well, it is.
It's not. First off, everyone is flying, so shut up. Mm. Like you're getting to New York the same in 5 hours and 21 minutes. You're fine. But whether it's the meal, whether it's the movie, whether it's the drinks, or whether it's the bathroom, if you want to pay more, then you can have more. If you don't want to pay more, you're probably smart. It's not worth the bump in price for the extra 3 inches of width on the seat.
Sure. But it's by definition elitist. I mean, you're paying more for an elite service. I think it's called the
elite class.
Yeah. I don't know if elitist and elite and elite class are. I don't know if elitist obviously has a negative connotation now.
Yeah,
I don't know if elitist has. Oh, look up the dictionary of elitist.
But are you cool with him shepherding the family who's technically in coach in the bathroom and out?
No. What do you mean?
But that's what
Yes, I'm saying absolutely not.
Okay, all I know is my wife when we were engaged, I think the week we got engaged, I was doing the opening of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, and on the way back, they said, "Sir, we have one upgrade. We were flying coming back. I've been up all night working for like 4 nights." She goes, "You take it." And I said, "Yes." I said, "Thank you." And she's never forgiven me. She brings it up every time we're at an airport, even including when we went to Europe with the kids. I said, "Like, why don't you and I fly business and let the kids be behind us in coach?" And they would love it, by the way, because they could probably try to get a drink or whatever they would do. Wouldn't do that. So
wouldn't do the kids in coach.
All of us went in coach because she was not going to have us go.
Listen, the two of us. That's an age and a height thing. I mean, you're shorter, but at 6'2", and my kid's at 4'7", it's all about height. It really is. So people talk about drinks. Drinks are $5 a pop. So if you bring $20, you can get 4 drinks. Mm-hmm. That's not the real Mason-Dixon line is the tall guys, and your knees are just mashed against the person that's reclined in front of you for 5 hours or 6 hours. When people are small, and I mean like petite, and they start talking about first class, half of it is out the window because little.
Every seat is first class to you.
Well, I mean, your wife is a petite woman, and it's no big whoop when you're, 5'5" and you're 120 pounds or 15 pounds. It's not a big deal. Now it comes to, Well, waiting to use the bathroom, which I don't think for most people is a big issue. They use it once during the flight. They have to wait 10 minutes. They have to wait. Drinks, pay for it. Meal, you can pack your own if you want. And then the entertainment. But it's really about that seat and the knees in the room. And when you're kids, that's out the window. I'd throw them in the back. All right. Where was it? Elitist. What is, you can read the dictionary.
First one is,
well, hold on one second. We'll do that, and we'll tell you the definition. Back for the fourth season with a crazy new twist. It's Alone on History. Rules have changed. 10 survivalists still dropped in an unforgiving wilderness, but now it's 5 competing teams, brothers, fathers, sons, first class and coach passengers, teamed up to go at it, even a married couple. It's a different kind of survival show. Besides their teammate, they're truly alone. No camera crews. They film themselves. No gimmicks. No forced challenges. Teams are split, equipped with 5 items each. To win, they must find each other and survive on North Vancouver Island, the longest. $500,000 at stake, everybody. That's no chump change. Tune in for all new episodes Thursday, 10 o'clock, 9 central on History. That's Thursdays, 10 o'clock, 9 central on History. The show is called Alone. All right, elitist, Brian or somebody.
Dictionary.com has it as catering to or associated with an elitist class.
Relating to or supporting the view.
And that one there says, relating to or supporting the view that a society or system should be led by an elite.
All right, so that's negative, right? But either way, whatever it is, whatever you pay for, you get. It's everything is Vegas hotel room.
Yeah, you're paying for an upper class. You get upper class amenities. Yeah.
Right. And I've flown first class many times where I was going to use the bathroom, but somebody had walked from coach and was going to use it. And what is, see, here's where I'm at. So everybody knows. If you tell a group of people you do not have the opportunity to buy this ticket and join us up here, that's a big problem. If you want to purchase the ticket and join us up here, then that's not a problem. If you're unable to afford that ticket and join us up here, that's still not a problem because you're still in a plane and you're going to New York.
You get to ride
for 5 hours in 10 minutes. Yeah. If you cannot afford a ticket on an airplane in general, still not a problem. If you cannot afford a ticket to take a bus to New York, now we're starting to head toward a problem. But that's where I'm at in my elitist notions. All right, let's see. Someone's got a question. I got a rich man, poor man. It was kind of an interesting one. John, 32, San Pedro.
Ace man, get it on.
Yeah, man. What's going on?
Miss Grad, Mr. Bald, how are you guys doing?
Mm-hmm. Say hi to David Wilde, please.
Oh, hi, Mr. David Wilde. I forgot the commie was there.
He wants everyone to be in first class.
Yeah,
please.
Why do you have classes?
All right, John, turn your something down.
Got a better echo going on.
Excuse me.
All right.
Okay, is that better?
Yes,
sir.
Okay. My rich man, poor man, being a drug dealer. And you got Pablo Escobar and Boston George, and then you got the guy in the corner.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I don't feel like that's a middle class.
Not a lot of middle class drug dealers.
And there's the super, strung out junkie on the street, and then there's the crazy. Let's do crazy things on dirt bikes because I own so much acreage.
Wall Street.
I'll only go to prison if I can build my own prison.
Right. I like that, John.
Or pay for my lawyer.
Yeah.
There's one exception. Weeds. The TV show Weeds sort of captured that. The housewife pot.
Yeah, the Breaking Bad and the Weeds are the exception.
Yeah, I don't know. But I don't know if that exists. I feel like those are good shows, but does that exist? We don't know.
Don't know.
I guess we wouldn't know. All right. Let's talk to Ed, 47 Portland. Ed?
Ace man.
What's going on, man?
Long time. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, Ball, Gina, Mr. Wild. How's everybody? Half guard.
Good.
So I was thinking with this Serena McEnroe thing last week about, best female player versus best player of all time. It's really ridiculous. We don't have to talk about that. I love watching the Williams sisters play and everything. But it got me thinking to, the Academy Awards. Why, arguably a field where men and women are equal, why do we have to have a actress and actor? Why can't we just have, the single best acting performance?
Point.
I'm with you. I got to believe Canada's got to be getting close to this. I don't know what they have over there. They have, I know they have a music, you know, they have a Grammy.
Junos.
Junos a Grammy, right?
Yeah.
What is our Grammys is genderless, right?
No, there's male vocalists and female vocalists.
Oh, God, that's Stacey Marquez.
There's rock performance and stuff like that.
Is that right? No, I don't think so. No, I'm sorry. That is the CMAs, which I do. They have a country. The
if only there was
the
someone
female.
Here who had intimate knowledge of how the Grammys
work. The MTV Awards. It's coming. I think it's coming. I think
we don't have like the female director and male director. You know, like you choose to parse these things in these odd ways.
I agree. Then, all the sort of gender insanity that we're sort of rocketing toward now in the name of just I don't know what everyone's rush is with this stuff. Like, I don't know. I think the whole idea is the less you care about gender, the more evolved you are. Or I think that's the people who announce it all the time, who think you're more evolved if you care less about this. I don't really care about it. I just recognize it. So that's unevolved.
Yeah, you're a bad guy
for recognizing gender. But either way, the further you get, they just had someone in Canada who was born that didn't have anything on their birth certificate. They're like non-binary, whatever.
They're gender.
So I think Canada. No, what is the Canadian? Yeah. What are the Canadian ones, Gary? That I was asking for. Do you have that?
I'm looking.
Oh, okay.
You know, I
that should be up there.
I'm wondering.
Do you ever get the you know, like you call a woman an actress and she like bristles at you, and I never had that.
Although I used to get a little confused with comedian and comedienne or whatever, but I don't bother with any of that. I don't think anyone should. But I did argue over an argument with a rape victim over her calling herself rape survivor. But hey, you got to take a stand.
Yeah, you pick
every
your
once
battles.
In a while. You got to really take a stand.
Choose your battle.
But I think this is where we're heading. I'm assuming it's where we'll be. We're going fast. MTV's done it. Canada had the first person born that had nothing on their birth certificate or didn't declare a major on their birth certificate.
That person's name is Cyril, S-E-A-R-Y-L.
Right.
And the quote from its parents is up to Cyril to decide how they identify when they are old enough to develop their own gender identity.
I believe you meant jurors.
It all just makes sense. So
a lot of pronoun problems there.
It's by the way, it's going to solve every problem. Now, the other thing that, we're looking at the folks. We don't know if it's the mom or the dad or the dad that's now mom. I guess it's the mom, dad that's now mom. All right. So this is going to cause a problem because
moving forward.
Here's what I think is going to happen. We're going to get rid of this at some point and it'll just be best actor and actress or whatever, but we'll be no categories. But then, if a year comes around where there are five males and one woman, then there's going to be a problem.
Oscar so male.
Yeah. There's going to do this thing where it's like, hey, there's not enough blacks. There's not enough women. There's going to be a problem if 1 year comes in and it turned out a bunch of dudes. Sure. Then it'll give way to this problem, which is the next year they'll have 3 and 3, but we'll suspect that one or two of the women really didn't deserve to be there, but we're just getting in there so we don't have this, so they seem progressive and there's not this.
Affirmative acting.
Ooh, I like that.
Thank
so
you.
For that reason, I kind of like it broken apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking, maybe possibly devil's advocate, I don't know, but the question, why haven't we done this in the past? Maybe in decades past, those really meaty lead roles really weren't written for women that often. So there really wasn't. It would be exactly that, one woman against, you know, four or five dudes, but just because those roles weren't really offered.
Mm-hmm. Is there any male, though, that can rival Meryl Streep in
terms
the
of
nominations
dominance? No.
And dominance?
She has, I think the next... I'm going to mess it up, but she has like 14 nominations. I think next is like 8 or 9 or something like that.
Who's that loser?
I think Steve.
I think it's Jack Nicholson.
What a loser.
But she's putting it out of reach.
Oh, like what a spaz.
How many does Steve Guttenberg
have? Embarrassing.
Currently, including this year where he's sure to get nominated for something?
No.
Probably. Half dozen.
So then you go, oh yeah, you got all these meaty roles for men, not for women, but then Meryl Streep kicks everyone's ass. Right. Ed?
Maybe we should do one for meaty women and non-meaty women.
Oh, that'd be good. We'll weigh him. I'll make sure Jimmy gets one of those scales they use at the track for the jockeys.
The water displacement?
And we'll just put him right on that scale.
Sure.
right before they walk out.
You are media enough.
Yeah, and if they go over $160, they do what we did in Pop Warner football. You got to turn your gown inside out. Let everyone know you're not eligible for the straw weight division.
I do think the media like pitting women in particular against one another during award season. They do like that sort of cat fight thing.
Especially when they're in a fountain. Meryl has this Meryl Streep, not the captain from the Love Boat, right? Okay. Hey, I'm
Meryl Schindler.
I like this
combined,
Dr.
The two
Drew,
Meryl.
This, let me do my best. I'm just looking for clarity. Is it okay to ask questions? I just want to be clear. Is it okay to ask
if
questions?
If I'm wondering, there's probably more people are wondering.
So is that Meryl stupid? This is Street? Okay, they're both with an S. Okay.
Don't jump.
I just want clarity. I'm just asking. I'm just asking.
Which was in the
so
Deer
Meryl Hunter? Streeping. Meryl Streep, 20 noms.
Whoa. That was way off.
Katharine Hepburn, next. Female, next at 12. And then Jack, at 12 as well. Okay. Next, according to Gary.
yeah.
But there's two, the top of the, not one and two are females.
Interesting.
There you go.
Also interesting, most awards ever won by an individual, Walt Disney.
22, oh, really?
22. I buy that.
Yeah,
they cleaned up a lot of special awards early on. They didn't have animated categories.
Special effects with the flip book.
Yeah.
He's won no B'nai B'rith awards.
No.
I'm still stuck on this. I'm still stuck on this Canadian kid. What was the kid's name? The genderless child?
Cyril or something like that. I'm not positive how to pronounce it, but I can spell it for you.
What happens on Cyril's first day of gym class when he or she meets the crusty 80-year-old gym teacher who's not buying into any of this? He's trying to separate the kids into boys on the left and girls on the... Cyril.
Yeah.
I heard about you.
Well, his parents said he did not like the arbitrary designation by the government, but that's not really that's not by the government.
Yeah,
whether you're into God or nature, they did the designating. All right, we don't know what the Canadian Oscars are, or they don't have.
I don't know that there is enough of a Canadian film market to have its own big.
Yeah,
film
I don't know. Come on down here.
Juno's for sure exists, but yeah.
The Genie Award appears to be
got
there.
Everybody has something.
Yeah, the Genie
even
Award.
Even the ones who don't produce a lot have enough.
I've heard of the Genie Awards. I couldn't tell you they were Canadian awards.
Not the ones I've heard of.
So the Genie Awards. Yes, and do they have?
It appears that it. These ran from 1980 to 2012, but then they merged with another award to come up with the Canadian Screen Awards.
All right. Well, let's see if they have the categories and if they'll meld them, as I believe Canada...
The Genie goes to... it's Rick Moranis again.
They're still separating.
Why even leaving the stage at this point, Rick?
Yeah, I feel like Canada will get there before we get there. Because I don't think we've ever done...
Cyril has anything to say about it.
Right.
Remember the year Burton Cummings performed at the Genies and sang American Woman? That was something. That was what a day. What a time.
Yeah. I feel like somewhere that song is still going. Because it just never... He keeps threatening to leave, but he never goes...
Bye-bye. We hear you. Bye-bye.
You're no good for me. I'll tell you what I'm going to... I know. You're going to leave.
Let me guess.
I'm going to go.
All right.
Would you like a Burton Cummings, Lenny Kravitz, hand the baton moment?
Oh, hold on a second.
Quiet.
God, it's like I didn't think I could hate Lenny Kravitz anymore until he covered that song. But to be fair to him, I don't think he thinks it's a good song. I think he does every song in front of a full-length mirror with a guitar or broomstick or something. And he mocks it up and he goes, how would I look playing this song?
Is Lenny Kravitz probably the coolest guy you wouldn't want to hang out with, but not if it involved him playing music?
I just remember...
Maybe Phil Collins in his prime?
I remember clearly on my bachelor party, we went on a boat and they had a CD and it was the best of Lenny Kravitz.
Yes.
And it was an EP.
Yeah. And I sat there. No, he's had a lot of hits. I hate all of them, but he had a lot of hits.
Hits are not best of.
Right. And I sat there, and I just started thumbing through the notes and the pages and stuff. And at some point, I got interested, and I counted the number of images of Lenny Kravitz on this thing. And then I asked everyone on the boat, you know, James Dixon and Daniel Kelson and... Jeff Ross and Jimmy Kimmel. Everyone guess how many pictures of Lenny Kravitz, single pictures of Lenny Kravitz are on this. It's a jewel case. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little liner. And they're like, 7? And all right, baby doll, what do you got? 11. Jeff Ross, what do you got? 4. Okay, Jimmy, what do you have? I'm going huge. I'm going 16. It's like, okay, would anyone like to know the number? 57.
How?
It's like, I don't know. He's just such a pompous jackass. I mean, it's like, I mean, at first it was Prince, and now it's him, and it's just, they're just such jackasses.
He's the most photogenic Jew in history.
That's
he
true.
Is.
He knows he's pretty.
He is. He is. And I just feel like he spends a lot of time cultivating.
I like the guy, but I have to say I interviewed him opening when he's opening for the Stones at University of Michigan, and I was led into his hotel room to interview him. He was in bed still, not quite up, but I talked to him while he was in bed. Ugh. At the end of the interview, he got up, and he was in a feather boa and leather pants in bed. So he sleeps like that. He sleeps ready for
so
a
he
photo
commits.
Shoot. He commits full.
Speaking of leather, remember when his junk popped out of that concert?
Do yeah.
I mean, what?
I mean, yeah. if you want to bring that trip, we wouldn't hate it.
That's what I was watching on the plane in between Miss
He's also one of these – I hate sizable. These guys. You know, when he's one of these guys who when he hooks up with what's her name from Cosby?
Lisa Bonet.
And it's all this like we're cosmic, we're this, we're soulmates, we're this. I breathe her air. She breathes my soul. And then it's like, oh, yeah, he was cheating on her. Like, just those kind of douchebags. Like, just shut up. I don't mind the guy who cheats. I mind the guy who does all the fucking cosmic talk and then cheats. Just shut the fuck up and play your guitar.
Speaking of which, to talk about someone we do know in a related – I listened to a podcast on the way from the airport here, like on the Uber ride home.
Mm-hmm. Not one of ours?
It was Jay Moore. Jay Moore on a podcast. It was a Podcast One podcast.
Yep.
Richard Marx's show, really, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Very good. And but Jay was talking about how he makes a lot of his money now as a life coach. And I'm like, I don't know. It's like I am not advertised off as a life coach. I like Jay Moore. I think he's a great guy. But, you know, I think guys who are not divorced should life coach, not the guys going through the throes of their second divorce.
This is a
David Wilde throwing shade.
No, I like Jay Moore.
Well,
no,
we get it. We get how much you like him.
Listen, David
said
Wilde.
Enough.
We are some look.
The plane
I've been
ride
thinking
was
a lot
enough.
About
I get it.
Here's what's going on. We have decided, as I said, and we've crafted a society where smokers are way worse than deadbeat dads. We've somehow decided to get up on everyone's grill about everything except for abandoning your family or cheating on your wife or really traumatizing your kids' family, creating a bunch of latchkey kids or young criminals or junkies or people that are going to fall victim to drugs or physical or sexual abuse. Somehow we've decided you cannot judge. We cannot judge those guys. We can judge guys who do everything else, but we cannot judge. Again, you want to smoke a cigarette, we're nothing but judging. It's all judging except for this one thing. And I agree. Guys sticking around, guys doing the right thing, guys being responsible, guys paying for their family, guys, you know, sort of manning up and rearing kids and doing the hard work of life and showing up to the games and paying for the lessons in the private school, whatever. Those guys should be heroes. They're chumps in our society. They're considered boring dudes.
Play it
and
safe.
The guys should just go around and sort of knock people up and move on and trade in that 40-year-old something for a 20-year-old something. We got no qualms with that. As a matter of fact, we're kind of envious.
He's
look, they're sort of heroes. Yeah, he's a rambling dude. And yes, I wholeheartedly agree. It started with us not judging broken families. The offshoot is if you're not going to judge a broken family, then how can you judge the guy who's broke the family?
Yeah, and by the way,
and where's the love for the guy who's hanging out, paying his taxes, and doing the right thing?
And by the way, I don't think from what I know, and you probably know a lot more. I don't think that's the situation with Jay Moore. I think it's, but I just thought it was funny.
Wow, this, you can't this, let it go.
But the thing that was crazy is
digging his teeth.
I listened to him, he went right from talking about how Nikki Cox and he had figured out love, and they had the secret to life, and she wrote all his great jokes, which I don't believe. All right. That he went right from that to tabloids about, you know, them splitting to today on the Richard Marx podcast on Podcast One. Great podcast, very fun with talk with him. But I'm like, you life coach? He goes, yeah, I have such good experience between my rehabs and my divorces. I'm like, I don't know. That seems like, I don't know.
You've
if
been
that's,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, hey, Gary, go comb through the ultranet and see if it's out there that he's with Jenny Buss.
It's out there.
Oh, it's out there?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I was hanging out with him and Jenny Buss.
Genie,
sorry.
Like the awards. Awards, yeah.
Genie Buss and me and him, I must have spent 2 hours with him on 4th of July because I was over at Bill Simmons's Malibu pad, and it's that stretch of PCH where you just look across your porch. There's a thin dog run of about, it's about 8 feet, 6 or 8 feet. And then there's the next porch.
Right.
And if you're standing out on your porch and you look to your right or look to your left, it's like somebody standing 8 feet away
sure.
on your own porch. And I looked to my right and there was Jay Moore. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? And he's like, hey, I'm with Genie Buss. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, come on over and have a drink. I'm like, all right. And then Jay went for a swim. And then I found myself leaning across the railing, watching Jay swimming with Jeannie. And she was like, he's a good guy, isn't he? And I was like, yeah, he's a good guy.
He's Jay.
I really like him. I was like, I like him too.
Jay's great.
I never follow up with, I sure as hell wouldn't marry him, but he's good for me. Like, I feel like I have a lot of conversations where I say to people, he's a good guy to me.
Yeah, he's a good guy to have a beer with.
Right. So, that was, I found that interesting.
Wow, that's fascinating. And speaking of type, you know who Lisa Bonet is with now?
Jay Moore.
You know who her side piece is?
No.
This show's not going to air till tomorrow, so you really have to.
That's
true.
I should
say
hurry.
For sure.
So she was obviously with Jimi Hendrix. I mean, Lenny Kravitz. I'm sorry. I come from a classic rock morning show. Now she's upgraded to a taller, prettier man, Jason Momoa.
Oh, really?
Is he pretty? You're a girl, so you're the...
He is.
Is he prettier than Lenny?
Yeah, we're not gay, so we don't know.
He's big.
Is he better
bulky.
Or worse looking than David Wilde? Because we don't know. Because we're dudes. Because we're not gay. Brian, yeah, are you gay?
Far from it, bro.
All right, so we don't know that, dude. Because we don't judge dudes.
He and David Wilde, I thought I was looking at a picture of David Wilde.
So what is he, 6'5", full of muscles?
I think so, Gary.
What's that?
How tall is he?
Is that attractive or something?
He's all right if you're into that sort of thing.
In the early seasons, he was one of the male stars in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. All right. Well, we don't judge dudes, so we don't know because we're not gay.
I hear he's attractive, and I have no choice but to, take women's word for it.
I'll find some gay dude and ask him.
Yeah.
I'll take his word for it.
Even
though I don't know any gay dudes because I'm not gay.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
But if we did, we'd have to take the word for it.
I could talk to a bi friend who's not really a friend.
And take half his word.
Take half his word or ask him to use him as a conduit to get through to the gay community.
Can you get
to ask those dudes if, is it Genie Mimosa?
Yep.
Is that a good looking dude? Or is that a drink? Maybe it's a super gay drink.
Breakfast drink.
Get the bi guy.
Really nothing about the drink that's gay. It just comes with a beard around it.
Sure.
You got to suck through it.
Why do you have to suck it, bro?
It's really just a Manhattan, but it has a goatee, comes with a goatee coaster.
Straight cutty
suck. Suck right off it.
With an umbrella.
So I was hanging around with Jay Moore and Genie.
Who's cute, right? Genie Buss, really cute, as I recall.
I was...
She's no Jay Moore.
No, I must say, she was not wearing a lot, because we were hanging out at the beach. And she was very attractive. I remember thinking she's very cute, and then it's like, you own... most of or some of the Lakers? Mm-hmm. The hell is going on here?
Must have been her place.
When did he get on with her? She was very, she's very cute. She's young, like impish. But so I guess they're a couple now.
Huh.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Mazel tov.
I think that hit the internet for the first time 2-3 weeks ago.
As this podcast landed.
All right. Yeah.
Well, Jay did more sports out here in LA, so he must have encountered her a number of times just through the, interviewing and whatever.
All right. Hey,
I'm guessing.
Anyway, if he's got advice, I'm listening. I'm with David Wilde. Smart Mouth, dual solution oral rinse. Only activated mouthwash, clinically proven to instantly eliminate bad breath and prevent it from coming back for 12 full hours. Zinc ion technology. That's what Dr. Drew loves. He loves the technology. That bacteria, it binds to the bacteria. It forces it to stop producing sulfur gas. Remember we were talking... I was telling you about the bed liner on the watermelon,
stuff.
And I always said it's A and B that always works. If it's just one, fit where it doesn't work.
Yeah.
This is what this is. It's activated. It's two parts, a two-part mouthwash, A and B. Nothing ruins an intimate moment as quickly stinky breath, so let's get with it, man. It is Smart Mouth. What do you do? Go to smartmouth.com. You can find it at Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS, wherever you like to shop. But again, part A, part B, that's what's effective instead of just a weird green wash you put in your mouth. SmartMouth.com. All right.
Speaking of Smart Mouth, have you seen Jay Mohr's documentary he did on the guy from the Bad Brains, HR?
He was the producer on that? I talked to him about that, but I refused to watch it ever since I found out he was divorced. I'm with you.
It's great. That doc is great. And also, please tell people, I don't know if you've seen it, watch The Defiant Ones. I consulted on it.
It'll blow
it's on
your
HBO.
Mind.
It's one of the best things you can watch this year. I think it's a masterpiece. Alan Hughes, the director, he said you should bring him in here.
Of the Hughes brothers?
Yes, of the Hughes brothers, Menace to Society. I'll bring him in if you want.
I'd love it. I will watch it. I hear it's a shoo-in for the genies this year. It's that good. All right. The 90s, Sundays, 9 o'clock on CNN. Robert Anasi is coming in. We'll talk about boxing right after this.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new, amazing app. This one's a game changer. There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon, Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife, Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more. Plus, every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen. And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more. So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself. Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com.
This week at adamcarolla.com, Take a Knee with Adam Carolla and Gina Grad.
You said something to me that really has stuck with me. I've used it for every other thing I've done since and continue to think this way. You said, when you come in, don't treat it like your first day. Treat it like your 200th day. And that just really affected me because that's what that means. When you tell someone to act natural, they'll tense up more. But yep. That was words that really made sense.
Subscribe to Take a Knee with Adam Carolla for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. And get unlimited access to Adam Carolla's archives. Sign up for Podcast One Premium. Use the Podcast One app or click the link at adamcarolla.com.
Robert Anasi here. Did I get that right, Robert?
Close enough.
The bitter... No, Gary says no. Anasi. I thought I... once I go Anasi. Oh, okay. Yeah, had
once
it written.
Anasi, doesn't go back.
Had it written phonetically, except for... Yeah. All right. Don't you think the A should be capital? Okay. Anasi. I'm going to write it down here. I've spent my entire adult life arguing with people over phonetics, which is the one thing I do know because I can't spell.
Think of like aniseed.
No, it's just it was written out for me, but the A was a small A, okay. And I wanted to go on instead of
A. Like Aniston.
Yeah, there you
go.
Robert.
That's our show today.
Thanks for coming.
When
yes.
Just when joking. Grandpa came off the boat, they didn't know how to spell his name either, and he couldn't read, so...
Yeah. Where was Grandpa from?
Paternal grandfather's from Lebanon.
And he settled where, and you settled where? And let's talk about the whole thing.
Providence, where I'm born and raised in Providence, Rhode Island, and went to New York for college and never went back.
And you're what they call an immersion reporter slash journalist. I'm guessing that means ride-alongs, get involved. You're going to write about boxing, you box.
Yeah. I mean, anything not to be bored, right? And it beats having a day job just showing up and seeing what these interesting, crazy folks are doing.
The book is called The Bittersweet Science. It's available as we speak on Amazon. If you go to adamcarolla.com and bookmark it and go through us, it'd be much appreciated. The Sweet Science was a book that I read that was recommended to me by Shelby Coffey, the aforementioned from last week or whatever, the editor-in-chief of the Los Angeles Times. I'll figure out who wrote that.
A.J. Liebling.
Right. Debbie.
No, he said he'd figure it out.
I'd figure it out. No, because Debbie Liebling was our executive at Comedy Central. His daughter was the Comedy Central executive while Jimmy and I were doing the Man Show and Crank Yankers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it's a lot of range for a family, right?
Yeah.
So you must have read that book.
Of course. He's the dean of boxing writers.
Why? Well, I remember reading it and enjoying it too, but I can't remember why it's so much better than everything until the bittersweet signs have come around.
Liebling was just, you know, comfortable in the world of boxing. He didn't treat boxers like, you know, freaks or space aliens. And he understood that they were just guys, eccentric guys, a lot of them doing a job. And he liked to be, you know, around that world. And he was also one of the funniest guys ever to put pen to paper.
The thing that I always find sort of interesting about boxing is you can tell what, who wrote the foreword? Oh, he wrote the foreword?
That's what it says here.
Did he write the foreword for the Bittersweet Science?
Yeah, for an older edition, maybe the most recent edition, yeah.
What's that?
For the Sweet Science.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, who wrote the foreword?
Rob wrote
the foreword because the book came out 25 years ago, but...
The newest version that came out in 2004, Rob wrote the foreword for.
So all right, you got to add that in your thing, because I read the book when you were still beaten off in a pod on the way to Europe. You know, that not knee-high to boll weevil.
A month ago?
You know, no, but I read the book in 1995 or 2003 or something. I don't even know when it came out, but it was recommended to me. It could have come out a long time before. But anyway, Robert's a young man. He couldn't have written it, but later editions. I like boxing because it's interesting because there used to be a lot of Jewish boxers, and there's always a lot of whatever group isn't doing well at the time. A lot of Irish boxers. So it's all Italian, all Irish, and all Jewish.
Right.
And you can kind of tell how a culture's doing by how long they do it. Like Jewish boxers had a little run.
A short reign.
And they got out. And they never came back.
Yeah.
And Italians kind of hung out for a little longer. Irish hung out for a little longer. Maybe blacks are overstaying their welcome. You can kind of... Actually, the only culture that never boxed, that never did well, was Indians.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Indigenous. You know, American Indians.
Right. No Asian boxers. Although it's part of Asia.
There are Asian boxers. There are some.
What?
Oh, yeah. Huh. There's some, but they're mostly... eight boxers in Asia or Asian boxers who have like come here because every group has to have some poor people. And in Asians, when they start importing Mexicans, it's too expensive.
Yeah.
You got to shop within house.
At the lighter weights, there's a lot of good Thai boxers, Japanese boxers, Filipino boxers, right, Manny?
Yeah. But again, a poor culture. Like when the cultures are poor. And so if you look at, you know, and it's a little tough with the real light division guys because certain cultures are just, you know, Filipino are just lighter in weight than, you know, African Americans, let's say, or Irish or whatever on average. But if you remove that part and you just kind of go to 170 pound dudes, it's pretty, it's funny. We have black, we have Hispanic, and then we have white, but it's European usually, yeah, like sort Russian of Eastern blocky kind of European. Which basically says, hey, Jews and whitey, at least here, we don't have to do that. You box because you have to.
Fight your way out.
Yeah, once in a while you find a Klitschko in there, but for the most part, culturally, you do it because you have to. But not you. Rob did it because he wanted to write about it. You actually went 7-5 for your career, huh?
The first 10 fights, you're in the novice division. Mm-hmm. So you're fighting guys who aren't experienced and as experienced, but as soon as you get over 10 fights, you're meeting the guys who are on the junior Olympic team. They have 200 fights already. And so you start, that's really a dividing line because that's where you either get destroyed or decide you're going to make this your life.
I did the Golden Gloves many years ago, and I was trying to think about that number, about the over-under amongst the... amongst the non-professionals. But even there, there's ranks. And yeah, it was 10 now that I think back on it. If you fought more than 10 fights, you fight. Because they have guys, especially some of these guys out of Cuba or the Soviet Union or whatever, and their amateur record is 337-3. Like, it's crazy. They don't even lose once every 100 fights. They don't average that. I mean, there's some guys
statistically win 100% of the time.
They're 100% of the time. Like, it's crazy. Who's the Who's the lightweight guy from Russia now? Is fighting. He's 7-0. He has like a belt already. He's considered pretty much unbeatable, even though he's barely had any. Gary will think about it. Any Come on, Gary. 7-0, douche. Come on. You think I'm that bad? He gave me Triple G.
Tough
Triple
day.
G's had 40 fights.
Ivan Drago.
No, we'll pull the guy's name out. He's got a lightweight.
Nikolai Valuev?
Yeah.
Valuev.
That guy's got like 7 professional fights.
He was the 8th person in the meeting.
Pavel Malakhov?
No.
This guy is 7-0 that I just, the first one I gave you.
Right, it's like 130-pounder or something like that, and he has like 345.
No, sorry, I was wrong. Hold
amateur,
on.
Amateur fights, and he's so good, but he comes from a place where they have nothing but amateur fights, and they don't have pros.
Right. I'm wondering, because I have no experience in this topic, when does the first one, when does your 10 start getting counted? I mean, if you are coming from another country, how many, who knows how many you have under your belt?
Well, my first fight in the gloves, you know, novice class, I came in, I was matched up with this Turkish guy. My trainer didn't think it was right because he was wearing these really nice boots, and he was like, wait, those are from the European Championships. And the guy, he actually called the Turkish embassy, and he gave him the guy's name, and it turned out he had won a bronze in the Euro Cup and had 175 fights, and I had, you know, 2.
And so the Turkish embassy is not just a gay bar? There's an actual Turkish embassy? Because I've called like a whole bunch of times. I left my... Well, there were prescription sunglasses, so they weren't cheap. But anyway.
Yes, Turkish embassy.
Hey, I left my glasses.
You have to speak up. I cannot hear.
You know lens crafters?
Hey, that's not the glory hole. That is a glory hole. Yes, yes.
What is this guy? Come on. He is. Give me the top pound for pound fighters. Top 10 pound for pound fighters right now. Give me the top 5 pound for pound fighters. Find the guy who's 135 pounds. See that he has 7 pro wins. And I think 1 loss for some reason, and then you'll give me the name of the human being. Thank you. All right. Sorry.
1 loss. Okay, that helps. Vasyl Lomachenko?
There it is. Lomachenko.
That's the man.
That's the man.
Yeah, they come up, you know.
What was his amateur thing? Sorry.
Those Eastern European guys are in great amateur programs, state-supported. It comes out of the Soviet Union where everything was amateur, and they get training and supported by the government in ways that fighters don't in the United States.
Oh, my God. I was just watching Real Sports with Brian Gumbel.
I'm behind.
Behind the Sorry. Sports. Or you're
no,
behind.
No, I'm behind the episodes. I love that show. But
He won back-to-back golds in Beijing and London as an amateur.
What's his amateur record?
His amateur career with an impressive career record of 396 wins and 1 loss.
He's Robert's next opponent.
396 and 1.
He then went back and beat up the guy who beat him 2 more times just to make sure that he sealed
and his family
like
and
on
his
the
children.
Sidewalk, yeah.
That's right. Thanks for tracking him down.
The new one is the Chechen or Croatian or whatever. This guy's running this place over there. He's got a whole like MMA fighting team, and they're shooing the gays. They're getting them all out of town. Yeah, Real Sports. Who is that guy? This is insane. Oh. It's also, I want to do a show called What Year Is It? Like where I just show guys like this and go, he's sitting there with a full beard and he's like, what's gays? We don't have gays here. Gays, let them go to Canada. We fight here. And it's like, everyone fights? Yes, we fight. And if you're not fight, you're not man. My father told me when I was 6. You come home, you're a man. You don't fight, you don't come home. Like, it's like, what? What? Yeah. How does this work?
It's quite a clear message.
Ramzan Kadyrov or whatever, he's head of wherever, and it's like, everyone needs to fight MMA who lives in Krapistan, Chechnya, and we're all fighting. And then they do this one, too. Like, America, they're weak. Let them bring their military. It's like, yeah, you don't get it. It's not arm wrestling, douche. We have Tomahawk missiles.
Right.
And nerds who are weak, who can, they'll guide them right up your fat ass. Like, I know. I always love that part where it's like, let them come here. Let them feel the sting of Allah's sword. No, that's not how it works.
Right.
They have Apache helicopters. They're just going to fly in. They have spent uranium Gatling guns, and they'll just shred everything you own. Let them try. It's like, okay, all right, you want to try.
Enjoy Krapistan.
Krapistan. Oh, this guy was great. You have to see this
guy. I got
to
track it down. Yeah, I love that show.
This guy's Wikipedia is a hell of a read if anyone's bored.
It's great footage of him just like, what do you mean? I don't hunt gay men. We don't have gay men. How could I hunt someone who is not here? Like, it's insane. It's insane. And by the way, all I'm saying is all the people here who claim to care, go over there and help out.
It's a good point.
I know all we do is oppress people here, but guess what happens there?
Yeah.
You get tortured, and so does your family.
Well, and his responses seem a little Jong-un-y.
Here's a good section. The heading is honor killings. In 2009, Tadrov stated his approval of honor killings based on the belief that women are the property of their husbands.
Yes.
And they must kill themselves if they're raped.
But, my friend, if that man later goes on and soaks a cock, we kill him. Turn about. Fair play. In the bedroom. Nobody turns about.
I'm calling the Turkish embassy.
Jesus Christ. What year is it?
2000 and terrifying.
I want to go around the world and just go, what year is it?
What are you doing?
What year is it? What's going on? You should write a story about that guy, Robert.
I think we should just put them all on islands and they can pull each other's beards and leave the rest of us alone.
Here's another gem.
Oh, when you say beard, you mean the one that's attached to him or his gay lover? His lady, yes, sir.
Here's another gem. The heading is Threats to the Whole World. When asked about the relationship between Russia and the United States during an interview in July 2017, Kadyrov replied, "We will put the whole world on its knees and screw it from behind."
Oh, so he is into it. He's sending a very confusing message.
Thou protest a little too much here.
Yeah.
I was watching the whole time just going, let's just get John Bones Jones to go over there and kick everyone's ass and then come back and then he could shut up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because he was challenging the UFC and and it's like, oh,
bring
boy.
It.
On the other hand, there's lots of footage of Floyd Mayweather and Mike Tyson paying him a visit.
Yeah.
I'm sure he just takes some money from some orphanage and gives it to Floyd to come down and say hi.
It's $250,000 to come over here. Say hi. Take some hands, take some pictures.
$250,000? That's
light.
That's John Stewart doing a corporate gig that's less than an hour from his pad. That ain't $250,000. Don't get you into Krapistan. That we're talking five plus.
I thought they pay for the first class flight. Next to David Wilde.
What is what's the project we're working on now, Robert?
I've been last 2 years or so. I've been kind of shadowing this. Police informant.
Does he know about it?
He is aware. Get you shot. And you know, basically following her around East LA, South Central, you know, rougher areas of Bakersfield, and just getting a sense of how crime and the law interact on the streets as opposed to on TV. And it's very different from the way you might think it is.
What we'd like to know. Point your mic down just a little bit, and then or not that far, wherever your
split
mouth
if
is.
I have.
Yeah.
Actually,
and then tell us whatever you've learned. Yes.
Hopefully, I would think this would be an example of it. But which one would you say is more dangerous, getting in the ring or following this guy around?
Well, you hope in the ring they don't have guns, right? But you know, this informant's one of the things that pisses him off is TV representation of undercover cops. He'll always complain about, you see undercover cops partying with the criminals and doing lines of coke and, going off in their car. And he's like, that would never happen. You know, they're not allowed to go anywhere unless they're under surveillance and, they're wired up and there's a team following them. He's like, we're the guys who do that job. We're the ones who, really, we're expendable. Nobody cares about us. So we get sent into all those dangerous situations.
So, but not, they wouldn't. He would do that or he wouldn't do that?
The informants do that.
They do.
The undercovers don't.
Oh, I'm sorry. The informants versus
informants are like free agents.
Right. And how does it work? Like, how does one become an informant?
There's a couple of different ways. Either you got busted and you don't want to go to prison, so you agree to rat someone out.
Right.
Or you're a neighborhood junkie and you need $20 and you'll tell the cops whatever they want to know so you can get your next fix. Or my guy was already in prison and he's a career criminal and he's like, I don't want to come back here. But all I know is crime. I've been doing
this. I still want to do what I love.
You can't turn your back on your career.
Been doing it since he was 14. So he thought, I can use these skills working for, FBI, DEA, ATF, and I can make money for what I'm good at and not get locked up.
How does the testimony work? Because like Mark Geragos would be very worried about whatever comes, informants let's say, certainly from a jail cell, happens all the time. Right? Right. This guy told me while we were having a cot-to-cot talk, he was on the crapper, I was on the edge of the cot.
A come to Jesus.
Staring at his dick, and he told me this. And it oftentimes doesn't work in court, or it does work in court, but it shouldn't work in court because that guy gets rewarded for this, so maybe he manufactured this because he's getting rewarded, but on the outside, how does it work?
Well, in Orange County, they just had to throw out hundreds of convictions, informant, elicited convictions, because the guy they'd put the informant in the cell with somebody, and it turned out he was making stuff up just to lighten his own sentence.
It has to go that way. If somebody says, you are going to sit in this whatever, could be a Costco, and they go, you need to be here for 6 years. Well, if you're telling Dick a little dirt about some of the other shoppers, maybe you'll be out in 14 months. You have to go, all right, done. That guy, they have a limit of samples on those blue cheese mouths.
Yes, that's right. One per customer.
Eight of them.
Himself? On the same day.
And if you check him, there might be one in his pocket.
Are you willing to testify to that?
Absolutely. All right. Yeah, it couldn't go any other way, right?
But on the streets, a lot of times, especially these days, guys are wearing wires with cameras. So you basically are watching a movie, getting it word for word. So that's,
So how do you shadow this guy? Or where he must tell you, hey, when I'm going into the crack house, you got to wait outside.
Yeah, I'll go to the places where he does surveillance first, writes down, where a place is, people coming in and out. So I'll sit in the car with him. I've managed to get my hands on some of his surveillance videos from takedowns, when he's in a hotel room with three meth dealers and the cops kicking the door. That's another thing, a cop can't be – an undercover can't be in the room when the tactical team breaks down the door. The cop has to get out be extracted somehow or other. He usually says, I have to go take a leak or I have to go to my car. But the informant, they're like, well, you can wait there while we kick in the door.
The cop can't be in there because he'll be made if he's undercover?
Nope, it's too risky.
Too risky, too many
bullets
potential
flying.
Bullets could be flying or whatever.
Exactly.
Huh.
That makes me feel sad for the informant. They really don't care what happens.
I feel like,
sad for the rat.
But undercover cop, you knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Yeah, there's a way to minimize it.
If the guy I got a bad feeling about says he's got to make a number two, and I'd be like, Jerry, you finish cutting the coke. Yeah. I'm going to the bathroom with this guy. The guy that I hear a lot of rewinding sounds coming from the small of his back. Yeah, like I...
That guy keeps talking to his sleeve, watching when he goes to the bathroom.
Yeah, it's like on the Catch Predator when she goes, come on in, I got some Toll House cookies and some sweet tea. I'll wait till you let me in.
Could you say your name clearly to me?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not... I feel like I should be in there. He's doing all the dangerous legwork. Yeah. I mean, embedding yourself with these mobsters and everything, that's inherently dangerous.
So you're not saying get the informant out. You're saying keep everybody in and let the chips fall where they may.
That's what I'm saying.
That's exactly
what I'm saying. But not the chips. That's California Highway
Patrol.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
They're different.
We don't want them to fall.
Yeah.
One of the great tells for undercovers is that they always wear sunglasses. And my informant says it's because they have trouble looking in people's eyes and lying to their faces. And he says, I'll know you're a good, I'll know you're a good informant. I'll know you're a good undercover if you can just look in my face and smile and lie.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hmm. So it's also a weird thing when it's weird sort of cosmically, getting back to my 2017 thoughts, where just basic crime is just still ubiquitous.
Right.
It's just here. You know what I mean? Like it seems so distant from my life, my kids' life, my community, like what I do, what I think about doing. Like just it seems so bizarre. Yeah. Like, we're gonna go in that guy's house, we're gonna take some shit and we're leaving. Like it just doesn't feel like
we're still doing this?
It just feels like there's a segment of society, a very small portion, who is willing to bust that window and steal that shit or shoot that person or do whatever it is. And for the other 99% of them, it's not even a possible.
Hmm.
I mean, other than, the occasional DUI or whatever it is like that. But I just mean, does it feel like all of the crime is being committed by just very small percentage of people?
Well, it's the main source of crime is the drug trade.
Right.
People, there's so much money there that a lot of people get pulled in. I mean, if you can make $1 million for a weekend of work.
Huh?
Oh, exactly.
I've caught this podcast.
Live show Nogales.
Well, yeah. Every time we talk to someone, he just goes, you got to legalize it. I mean, it's insane. It's a kind of a chess match that you can never win. It's just you've done this thing where you've created this black market for something that people are always going to want. You know, there's a percentage of society that's always going to have a demand for this product. You know, booze, cigarettes, whatever. Whatever you want to make illegal, Dr. Drew will go along with you, and then there'll be a small group of people that want it. And in this case, it's not that small, and it'll never go away. There's just no choice but to regulate.
Well, look, if you're like a border agent and you're making 75 a year and someone gets in touch with you.
Gary, that's not a lot of money. Gary's like, yeah. Where's that application?
Someone gets in touch with you and they say, listen, if you look the other way when these three trucks come through, I'll triple your yearly income. I mean, the possibility of corruption is so high. And then you look at a country like Mexico where they're not making 75 a year. They're making $3,000 a year, you know, and the police have to buy their own uniforms and guns and, you know, take and rob people at traffic stops. There's just no way to resist that pull.
Well, also, I feel like this is something that comes up a fair bit, but who amongst us really wouldn't take that deal? I mean, we can all pretend, hey, this is a good cop, this is a bad cop, it's holier than thou guy or whatever. But if you're making this much and someone goes, look, I don't need you to join the syndicate. I just need you to just sneeze and tie your shoe when this truck goes by. And then we'll give you a nice big shopping bag filled with 20s in it. Everyone I went to high school would have gone along with that.
Yeah, especially if your alternative is nothing.
Whatever it is. Like, yeah. I don't, including myself. Like, I don't, you know, now I wouldn't do it, but when I was 27, I would have done it. Everyone I grew up with would have done that. So how are we expecting this to change if it's just based on, you know, like, it's a sort of a thing where what we're doing is we're going, look, you're a poor person. If you check your savings account or your checking account and it turns out the B of A is putting an extra $10,000 in there, I need you to alert the management of that B of A immediately, or it'll just be there and no one will ever ask for it back. What percentage of people who are poor or rich would just go, I'm going to talk to the manager Monday morning first thing? It's a small percentage. Yeah. And it's not good versus bad. It's just sort of human versus outlier. There is a small percentage of people that would do it, but chances are, if you decide to be a border patrol or a cop, you might not be in that group in the first place. And there you go. And thus, here we are.
And my informant's about just set up a big takedown out in the southwest of a U.S. judge who's been smuggling arms across the border.
Wow.
Well, it's kind of just being a human, and once you know that. I mean, I've always said that the politicians or the decision makers, the rule makers were sort of more sociologists in the sense that there's a right and there's a left version of it. This is the right version, which is, hey guys, it ain't going away. People are people. The judges, it'll turn people bad. You got to legalize and you got to, you know, I'm not saying do it irresponsibly, but whatever it is,
you got to
regulate. You can't do this.
It's the ultimate pragmatism.
Yeah, the left version is.
It doesn't feel good, but it's got to be done.
I know you think giving poor people more welfare is going to help them. It's not, because we've done the test. It's not going to work. And on this side, drugs, illegal, you know, tough on crime, whatever, tough on drugs, just say no. Nope, doesn't work. So as disappointing as that is, and as disappointing as giving people on, you know, on welfare more money so they can pull themselves out of poverty, that doesn't work either. All right, so what's it going to do? What works? Even if it goes against what's in your heart or in your conscience or what you think is right or what you'd like other people to think of you. You don't want to – nobody wants to run on, I'm soft on drugs, I'm soft on crime, I'm soft on – you know, nobody wants to run on that. No one wants to run on take the money away from the poor people. You can't – but can we just figure out what works and then we'll just do it?
Yeah.
But we can't even do needle exchanges in this country.
I know.
So, and so you get someone, a junkie, who has, you know, HIV because they can't get a clean needle, and who pays for that?
It drives me nuts. That's why I have AIDS. I mean, that's why Brian has it. I mean,
we've said too much.
I've said too much. I thought, Gary, you got to check that out, because I remember a lot of needle exchange talk, late 80s, early 90s. Don't let the AIDS cross over with the junkies into the heterosexual, whatever. And I don't know if we ever came out or not, but it's stupid. It's yes. You don't like heroin. You don't like AIDS. You don't like junkies. You don't like anything. But here we go.
Yeah. What about what comes with it?
Right. That's it. As a matter of fact, anyone making a law should be the exact opposite of what we're talking about, which is I have no thoughts about AIDS or junkies or heroin. I simply have thoughts about what works, and I'm simply going based on that.
Yeah, it'd be a great platform, very unpopular, because like I said, a lot of it doesn't feel great.
I'm still right. Reading up, but the first government-funded one was in the Netherlands in the mid-80s.
Oh, well, the Netherlands is... You can get government-sponsored prostitutes there. Like, yeah. If you're low income and you can't afford your own...
Prostitutes for
your own streetwalkers, they will bring one, certified fresh. Yeah, low mileage.
Yep.
Not used, but previously owned. And they'll bring it by.
Certified, refurbished.
They'll bring it by your flat. All right. Look that up. Here in the U.S. is what I'm talking about. Thanks. Patreon. Corolla for a Cause. Now available at patreon.com/AdamCarolla. Take a knee. Just $5 a month. Oh, here, Gina Grad. God, we have hundreds of people on that now.
That was so much fun.
Well, you'll be due for part two.
Nice.
Next time a real celebrity drops.
Absolutely.
And now we have Adam's Best for 2 months. $2 more, another $3, and you can get my daily podcast with minimal ads. I'm personally donating 10% everything we earn to the National Alliance for Mental Health. Why? Because I believe it all trickles down from there. So, good charity, little win-win. Put a little wind in the sail of the pirate ship. That's patreon.com/AdamCarolla. All right.
It appears there were some programs going in the 80s, but in 88... needle exchange programs being federally funded was banned.
Because some politician wanted to be tough.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Worked out.
It's weird.
That was
it's
overturned like... in 2009, by the way.
All right.
Thanks, just, Obama.
It's just what is. Just reality on reality's terms. That's all. Not what's tough, what's not tough, what you peer on. There's something going on with politicians in the popularity contest part, and that's a big,
yes,
big there is problem. Something. Because... look no further than, you know, your high school president, which is if somebody realizes I'd like to be student body president. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say half days Friday.
Yeah. There's always wild promises. And I was like
sloppy Joe Thursday.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Pizza boats every day.
Extended lunch, 2 hour marathon dance lunch on Tuesday. It's like if everything you do is just given. Better? Oh, yeah, yeah. Boutonnieres and blowjobs, we're calling it. Not even a prom. We're changing the name. So if we just do that, it is going to get you elected, but I don't think it's really going to help the student body if you tell them no more studying and no more showing up and no more anything. But it is a weird thing where that person has now realized, here's how you get elected.
That's right.
Do low-income students get prostitutes? Because I'd vote for that.
In the Netherlands, they do.
I do, because it helps lift their genitalia out of poverty.
At Holland High, they sure do.
Yep. All right, let's do a little bit of news, Gina Grad.
You got it. Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
We talked a little bit the other day about how R. Kelly is allegedly being sort of called a cult leader.
Or as I know him, Ralph.
Is that you know him?
You know what the R is for?
Okay. It's for Ralph?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Well, then we know.
Well, he knows better.
He's a friend. I call him Ralph.
Okay. Yeah,
it's not Robert. It's Ralph.
It's Ralph.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the story continues. R. Kelly's been challenged to a showdown in court from the father of one of Kelly's alleged captives, Joycelyn Savage, according to TMZ. Tim Savage, father, responded.
Joycelyn Savage is the name of the girl?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that's the father who.
Joycelyn?
Well, first off.
Well, if it's Ralph, it could be anything.
All bets are off in this new world order of crazy names. I don't know anyone's name. Everyone's got a crazy name. Yeah. But sorry.
Yeah.
Joycelyn is a good name for Curly from the Three Stooges to say.
Joycelyn.
Yes.
So Tim Savage, the dad, he responded to the video TMZ posted of his daughter. Joycelyn insists she's not being held against her will and wants her family to stop contacting her. But Savage says the video.
This is my worst nightmare as a father, where my daughter becomes one of Ralph Kelly's hoes.
Yeah, well, he's right. You know living I mean? In a penthouse of his somewhere in New
undisclosed
York.
Undisclosed location.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Savage says the video proves his point, especially because Joycelyn would not say where she currently is. In denying the allegations, Kelly's
camp.
Oh,
I know where she isn't. Niagara Falls. Slowly she turned.
Step by step.
Look it up. Yeah.
Kelly's camp said that they would go after this accuser.
Kelly's camp sounds like a...
Don't go there. Don't send your kids.
It just sounds like for underprivileged kids. Yeah. Some of these kids have never seen a pine cone.
We got to send to Kelly's camp.
Don't do it. He said, Savage says, bring it on. Bring on the lawsuit. So I'm going to show you two clips. First, here's Joycelyn's dad, Tim, addressing R. Kelly in a video directed at R. Kelly.
Please be black.
You know the reason why Miss Joycelyn Savage didn't tell you where her location is? She's not allowed to tell you her location. Mr. R. Kelly, if you want to file a lawsuit, you should have filed it yesterday. I'm waiting on you. File the lawsuit. If that's what you want to do, I'll see you in court. File it so everybody can see your dirty laundry. File it. That's what they need to see. And Joycelyn, I'm praying for you, baby. I'm praying for you.
Now, Joycelyn responded to her dad in her own video, and this is what she has to say.
Hi, this is Joycelyn Savage, and I would like to direct this message to my family, but especially my dad. Dad, you know everything that's going on with the media and the internet, and what you have done is a complete disaster, and you need to stop. Because right now, I am fed up with everything you are doing. You're embarrassing me and the whole entire family. I am happy where I'm at and the people that I'm around, and it's getting out of hand, seriously. Because honestly, you know the situation that had happened that night when I went to meet R. Kelly. So I would like for you...
He knows?
Matter of fact, I would love... for you to stop what you're doing, because this is I can't believe you even went this far. I love you to death, but I need you to understand me. Please stop what you're doing. Please.
She is dressed like Tito Jackson circa 1976. You can find, Gary, you will find the Jacksons in the exact same outfit Joycelyn.
The pinstripe?
Was in.
The
ribbed.
You're going to find a picture of the Jacksons just from weird memory. I'm not a big Jacksons fan, but I will tell you, you will find Michael Jackson. You'll find a picture of Michael Jackson in the exact same outfit with different hair at the time.
Robert, your next investigative, like immersive journalism should be as one of R. Kelly's hoes.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, try and get like in one of his like penthouses.
I think I'm too old.
That's true. He only goes 18 to 30.
But they need the house
bunny. He
only goes
17 to 17.
They need the sort of, they need the senior girl who never seen out of the corset.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like the porn chick who doesn't take off the corset because there's some stretch marks. And
she's aging
C-section.
Out. But...
She's aging out, but she keeps the other ones kind of in line.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I can see that for you.
Like the headmistress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so some news report that...
It's your next assignment.
Joycelyn's dad, apparently, when she's like, you know what you did, and you know what this is about.
Does he make a lot of money? Does he make good money? I know he's had some hits. Music is always very confusing because you have the guy gave away all his publishing for $75 and Geffen owns it all and he never made a penny off that. And then there are guys where it's, oh, he just keeps getting...
According to the article I read, he wrote, I Believe I Can Fly, and he owns the... he owns the rights to that.
Celebrity net worth puts him at 150.
Whoa!
150,000?
Million.
What?
Where do you sign up for this hoe gig?
Undisclosed.
So there you go. Like, you just would have no idea...
How?
That's... Space Jam. I Believe I Can Fly.
Was that
Also, isn't that a fairly like simple song?
Yeah, the song doesn't
I Believe I Can Touch This Guy.
How often does it pop up on
This is my whole point. That my whole point with him is
it's not ubiquitous.
When he said 150, you thought it could have been $150,000.
Yeah, I was like, oh, he's not doing so well.
Right.
That was my thought.
You wouldn't know if it was 15 million, 150 million, or 1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You're right.
With him,
absolutely
I said,
right.
Put
absolutely
it up.
Right.
There. You might go 1.5.
It would be tempted. It's likely as 15.
That's why you got to go deep cover, Robert.
Just saying.
I need some work done first.
We'll pluck those eyebrows.
Yeah, we'll make it work.
Yeah.
So when she said, "Dad, you know what you did," some people are reporting that he actually dropped her off at a friend's house so those two, so his daughter and the friend, could drive to R. Kelly's to be mentored as singers.
How sure you don't want to go by Cosby's place? How
I
old
can't
is
these only two options?
How old is she?
I couldn't find an age for her. She looks very young. And if he's hanging out with the chicks at these, wherever, these houses between 18 and 30, she's got to be closer to 18.
R. Kelly calls her the old broad.
Yeah, the long right. of the tooth.
Well, Gary, don't look at that, but you got to find Michael Jackson.
Calls
in
her
that
my
exact
silver
same outfit. All right, I'll tell you about True Car, man. Shopping for a car, make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. People configure cars online. Only to find out they're not available. Don't do that. Go to True Car. You get real pricing on actual inventory. Not pricing offered by True Car, but pricing from actual True Car certified dealers. So they become a certified dealer. They have actual product. They have an actual price. They give it. You go online. They've done over 3 million cars by over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. True Car users save an average of $3,000. Off of MSRP. So when you're ready to buy and you want to go new or you want to go used, visit True Car, see what others are paying for the exact same car, have an enjoyable, more confident buying experience. Let's go with True Car. Whether it's new, whether it's used, it is True Car. All right, one more, or until Gary finds that picture of Michael Jackson. Well, Max Zapata?
Yeah. Oh, my God. How do you do that?
That's pretty good.
I have a weird memory for ensembles.
For sequined outfits?
I know. 70s music and ensembles.
Woo!
Was there ever a time you were ashamed of this skill? Because this is pretty amazing.
We're looking at Michael probably right around before Thriller, Off the Wall era.
Like 77-ish.
Yeah.
A gorgeous jumpsuit.
I
don't know why. I have some kind of weird memory, which doesn't involve anything other than feelings. Other stuff reminds me of other stuff. And I'm not... Now, people try to chalk my stuff up to, I'm sorry, I'm not a huge Michael Jackson fan. I don't own a Michael Jackson album. I've never discussed him other than in the context of whatever's going on. I don't have any photos of him. I don't have any memorabilia. I don't have anything. I have the same exposure to Michael Jackson as anyone else does, maybe less in that
your average non-fan.
Most people have bought an album at some point.
I don't want to out you on this show, but I feel like it has to be done. Gina and I were discussing the live show on the way to Vegas, and you came out like, you know what's up about MJ? No, not again. We're not talking about Michael Jackson.
For now.
79, by the way, this photo's on. But I've seen, you know, the retrospectives and whatever's on, whatever you see on TV. And when I saw her outfit, it just made me go Michael Jackson. I don't know why. And I wouldn't even argue with her other than I have a... When I see her outfit, her outfit's unique. The uniqueness of her outfit makes me have to think of other things to link it to. And the other thing, only thing I can link it to is Michael Jackson circa 1979.
You got it right down to like the mock turtleneck.
His is a little, looks like it's a little nappier.
It's a little sequinier.
Yeah, but the color palette and the...
Pattern,
it seems to be about the same. I don't know. It's a weird thing. I just see a picture of her, and I think I can think about Michael Jackson. I don't think about her. But
it's pretty amazing.
It does make me tell everyone, when I tell you, here's what this is making me think of, and you go, no. And I go, just do it. And they go, no. And then I go, check. And they go, I check. Nothing. I go, check again. Don't argue. Just if I'm feeling it, there's something there. So she's there with. Well, you can go to amcroll.com and see. Okay. It'll be nothing when you see this, but it was a pretty deep draw.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, Governor Chris Christie's approval rating in New Jersey is at 15%, no doubt partially due to the closing,
the ugly truth.
The closing of the bridges and the beaches during his tenure.
I'll tell you one thing I like about him. He's a fat guy who doesn't mind walking around with an ice cream cone.
That's true.
And he leans into the
yeah,
weight.
Most literally. Fat guys, it's a secret shame. You know, they're fat, but they'll walk around with a kale bar or something. You know, we all know, look, you're doing something right. To be fat. But still walking around with an ice cream cone.
He's like, yeah, I'm doing something.
Your shorts hiked up extra high, and your gunt underneath your belt, like with the double decker scoop. Yep. Like, I don't know how that guy. I don't know how a guy can feel that good about himself, but that's.
I've always loved this one. He's dumping a bag of M&Ms into a box of M&Ms. One of my favorite photos.
It's a great. It's
That's
great.
A boss right there.
And he'll yeah. do. He'll do like a picture with someone, and they'll be putting his arm around him. And be like, "Honey, what? Hand me my ice cream cone." And I can pull it front and center in the picture, and then I'll take the picture.
Yeah, and he lives the life because with the whole beach craziness, one of the reporters said, "You know, you did this and whatever, and you know, people are mad because they'd like to go to the beach too." And his response was, "Well, maybe they should try being governor."
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
That's one thing I like about Chris Christie. He owns it.
It's weird when people...
Not apologetic.
I'd like to talk to his mom, because I know his mom did something brilliant with him, which has just made him feel like, I don't care. You could be the fattest. You must be the worst. You could be the worst at sports in your entire grade school. You're still the best, and you're going to run this city one day.
Thanks, Mom.
You want an ice cream cone?
Boy, do I. Put it right on top of this one.
Well, this may have accounted for some of the boos that Christie received. He was sitting three rows behind the Mets dugout at Citi Field Tuesday night. He caught a foul ball.
Well, he's actually just one row behind, but he was spilling into the third. Yeah.
When fans realized it was Chris Christie, they did boo, which may or may not have prompted Christie to walk back a couple of rows and hand the ball to a child. The Mets announcers didn't make any mention of this, but as you'll see in this clip, the St. Louis announcers from Fox Sports Midwest certainly noticed. Here's the video.
3-2, he's popped up. Rivera giving a look at it. And a souvenir for Chris Christie. Are you kidding me?
How about that? You just noticed
him. Barehanded it.
Yeah.
Boy, are you hot, I'll tell you. You just noticed him between innings. And what do you know? He gets a ball. Left-handed catch.
That's a glove hand.
Get out of here.
Nice to see him get from the beach here to the ballpark.
Oh, little jab.
That's as edgy as it gets when they do Major League Baseball.
And I watched this video a couple times, and I'm not sure, but the girl next to him, I don't know if that's his daughter or whatever, but reading her lips, it seemed at one point like she said, you have to give that ball away.
Oh, really?
You have to give that to somebody.
Do you agree with me, Gary?
Yeah, Gary agrees.
It's good advice.
Watch that part again?
Yeah, you got to if you're on camera. He gave a weird high five.
Oh. You have to give it to someone, it sounds like she's saying.
Yeah.
So he gave it to a little child, and he signed
traded
the ball.
For a double scoop. Barter.
Nothing's free.
Yep.
I do love, the best part about baseball, the only good part about baseball is once or twice a year when you see the sports highlights where it's out in the outfield of Arizona or something, and the fat dude does knock over the 9-year-old to get the ball. Like when they're scrambling. Yeah. The best part is when they hit it into an open part of the bleachers and there's kids running in it, and then
it's
one
not
drunken
a packed
dude.
Game, a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
Out of my way.
I love that. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, one more.
All right. Well, Entertainment Weekly reports that James Franco is both directing and starring in a movie called The Disaster Artist. Very excited about this, which details the making of 2003's infamously bad but also famously entertaining movie, The Room.
Gina, I'm guessing you've seen this.
Yes, okay. I own it. Franco himself.
I'm going to borrow it from you. Familiar with this out of The Room?
I'll show you a little clip.
No, I want to know about it.
You'll know.
It's that legendarily disastrous.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, very, very.
There was billboards all over town.
Schlocky movie.
It wasn't supposed to be tongue in cheek, though.
You're right. It's not intentionally campy, but it's sort of like celebrated, you know, as it's so. Bad,
now there's midnight showings all the time, and people love it.
I need to see
a
clip or something.
I'll show you,
Gary.
So Franco himself. Well,
it's up there with Birdemic. It's up there with like Birdemic.
Oh, Birdemic.
I can just play you this YouTube video. It says The Room funniest scene.
Oh, and the Foley on this one's
but
great.
Is this a big budget movie? No. There's somebody in it.
This guy Tommy Wiseau. He stars in it and directed. He got some money from someone.
Probably half a million.
Oligarch, maybe.
Gene Simmons.
Exactly.
He looks a little young Gene Simmons.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Now I know what you're saying. But it wasn't a big bust or anything. It's just a little weird movie.
It caught fire. Yeah. Yeah. There's
no names that no one knew.
Yeah. Okay. When you were talking about a big bust of a movie or something. I think we're talking about Ishtar or something.
Oh,
but
no,
this is
no,
a
no.
nothing movie.
Yeah,
right.
No, he got a ton, yes, apparently, of money from some...
The billboard was up on...
Everywhere in LA.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I should drive home, and mm-hmm. the guy looked like young Gene Simmons. Right. Now I got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Franco himself plays the movie's director and star, Tommy Wiseau, while his brother Dave portrays actor Greg Sestero, upon whose memoir The Disaster Artist is based. The guy, who was not an excellent actor, but definitely chronicled the experience, he wrote a book about it, and this is based on that. Other cast members include Seth Rogen, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas. Now, this movie's probably starting to sound a little more familiar, but if you can't place it, here's a 6-second clip, and then I'm going to play you the trailer, so they'll call each other back.
Not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hey, Johnny. What's up?
I have a problem with Lisa. She said that I hit her.
Okay, so that's part of the trailer. Now, I'm sorry.
Bam?
That's part of the, yeah. That's part, and the guy he was talking to, I believe, is the one that wrote the book. So now here's the trailer for the movie. Franco playing that role. Seth Rogen playing the director.
So we watched the actual movie.
Yes. Now mm-hmm. here's the trailer for the movie.
Fake movie. And... action!
What line? What is line?
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Okay.
Action!
What is line?
Take 13. Action!
I did not hit her. Okay. Wine.
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. Take 67. Action.
I hit her.
No. Do you want to change the line?
You're doing great, man. We'll get there.
Action.
That's his younger brother.
Action. Action. Action.
You have to say it loud. I can't hear it in here. Say action so I can hear.
Okay. Action.
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. Yes!
So anyone who's a quote-unquote fan of the original movie is going to
I feel like
it.
You should track down the movie before you see this one.
Oh, you have to. Yeah. Or at least watch clips online.
So it's the new Ed Wood.
Yeah.
I think actually it is, yeah.
They just did the thing that drives me nuts, which is when you're talking to someone through a door and they're going, I couldn't hear you. And you're like, but we're talking
now.
Now.
You clearly heard something.
Like, every time you sit in your trailer, it's like, come in!
Miss Corolla?
Come in!
Anybody in there?
Just come in! Come in! You're eating or something? Mm-hmm. Go, come in! And they go, are you in there? Yeah, come in! Then they come in, and I go, next time I scream, come in, just go, I couldn't hear you. Like, I heard you ask, what?
I wonder if he's in there.
Yeah, it's like, you can't hear me because you have to be able to hear me because I'm screaming and I'm angry, and then you're talking under your breath, and I can hear you standing outside the...
No.
Okay. You guys should just watch Windy City Heat. I just realized.
The best. It's the original.
Watch my movie. I never plug it, but watch Windy City Heat. It'll be better than this.
There's a little bit of crossover there with Tommy Wiseau and Scary Perry, Perry Caravello.
But Windy City Heat takes it to another level.
Oh, yeah. One's like intentionally
Truman
funny.
Truman Show situation.
Yeah. Just watch that. All right. Let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
That movie could be a little too cool for school. I'm not sure.
The one we watched the trailer for, Disaster Artist?
I think it could be.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to stand back and kind of poke fun at the whole thing, or if they're going to... I don't know. Depends on what route they take. Yeah.
We'll find out. Meanwhile, LifeLock, FBI says over 1 billion lost to internet scams in 2015. Someone's identity stolen every 2 seconds in ways you may not detect if you're only monitoring your credit. So, thieves. They could sell your information on the dark web, or they could go online, go to those online payday loan places and do it in your name, ruin your credit. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats. If there's a problem, their U.S.-based identity restoration specialist will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all business. But LifeLock is the best. I have it. Kids have it. Wife has it. Philly Cheesesteak is out there. May or may not have it. He won't talk. Trying to get it out of him for about 18 months. He just does a lot of naps. Does a lot of napping. So LifeLock, no one can prevent all identity theft, as I said, but LifeLock is the best. And it's 2017, even though certain countries aren't aware of it. Let's get it, man. LifeLock, Dawson.
Act now and get the added protection of Norton Security free for the first year when you bundle Norton and LifeLock memberships. Plus, for a limited time, you'll also get a 15% discount for your first year of your LifeLock membership. Call 1-800-LifeLock or go to LifeLock.com and use promo code ADAM15. That's ADAM15 to save 15% today. Terms apply.
All right, podcasting masterclass coming up, Irvine Improv, August 5th. Come on out and say hi. Check it out at amcarolla.com. And The King of the Underdogs is a new doc we have on chassy.com, chassy.com. It's pretty interesting. It's got Sylvester Stallone in it and Martin Scorsese.
It's about John Avildsen, the director of Karate Kid and Rocky.
Yeah, it's an interesting doc about underdogs. I'll tell you more about it.
Yeah,
we'll
please.
Figure it out. Tonight, Town Hall, me and Mark Garrigus down at 10E in downtown. So come on out and say hi, eat a little food and all that good stuff. Corolla drinks for anything you need to know. And what else? The Bittersweet Science. It's available now as we speak on Amazon. And what else do we got, Robert?
Couple other books to check out.
Yeah, my book about fighting in the gloves, and Last Bohemia, which is about Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and how it changed.
The gloves, as in golden gloves, if people want to understand that. All right, so until next time, it's Adam for Robert and Gina and Bald saying mahalo.
We will put the whole world on its knees and screw it from behind.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Gina Grad is a radio show weekday mornings at 100.3 The Sound in L.A. Come out to the Reasonable Downtown Hall tonight at Tenney Restaurant in downtown Los Angeles. And for everything Adam Carolla, including tickets to the cruise this November, go to adamcarolla.com.